Radio Saudi. Saudi
Digital.
Ayy, cut up the station, it's by that time for Fila. Most likely he a small fry if he want stamp by Beehive. It's one in one station only, they got the streets on fire. So please do not touch the dial, cut we finna go live.
What's happening, what's happening, what's happening? Of course you know it's your boy Beehive Radio Shawty. I'm stepping in the building, I got my West Coast fam stepping off in this thing. Glasses Malone,
hey, what's the deal?
What's going on, man?
Can't call it, man. It's good to be here.
I mean, first of all, Glasses, you done came through. I wish New Face was here so he could get a hold of these things,
man,
right here.
Man.
I mean, we got the cassette tape right here and the CD of Council D's Nuts.
That's accurate. That's accurate. Yeah.
First of all, Glasses, what was it that made you call it Council D's Nuts, man?
Really, we was talking about it earlier. It's just this crazy peanut allergy going on. Nah, because I'm just... I feel like we from the streets, man, and we really got to keep saying what we want to say.
Yeah.
We got to keep letting the world hear the voice of the ghetto, uncensored, unadulterated, our perspective.
Exactly.
And I got to keep representing. So if it means Pepsi don't want to pay me, you know, cancel these nuts.
Come on.
Fuck y'all checks. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm going to get it off the corner.
Exactly. When it comes to just being able to get it out the corner and out the mud, though, man, what has that independent grind been like for you, sir?
It's crazy because we also in a time now where everybody feels like music is not for sale.
Yeah.
So it is crazy having CDs and cassettes and vinyls.
Yeah.
But, you know, I created my own website. Shout out to my boy Nip Hustle. Rest in peace.
Right.
TheCripStore.com. And I've been selling a lot of physical albums. You know what I mean? Vinyls, CDs, tapes. And people just been showing love. It's been good.
I mean, that's that direct-to-consumer grind as well, but that's where it's at for people that got real fan bases, sir.
Sure.
But, I mean, Glasses, can you take me to day one, man? What was the moment in this 50 years of hip-hop span that hip-hop bit your ass and you said, you know what, I love this thing, let me get into it?
So that's a trick question because this didn't happen to me to 2019.
What?
I had already made millions of dollars. I had already got record deals, had hit records, made dope shit, but it didn't really bite me the way it should until 2018-19.
Talk to me.
2011, like, I'm going through this thing, like, I'm trying to figure out music, I'm making a dope album, and my DJ kind of put me up what was BPM, explained to me what BPM was, and it kind of set this thing off in me and made me start understanding records, and then hip-hop came into the fold, and then marketing. And then by the time I was finished with this 2011, 2018, 19, I had finally fell in love with it. And that's when I made Tupac Must Die. That became my finals from all this college that I've been going through. That's hip-hop, records, and marketing.
In the beginning then, what was it that got you into the game then, sir?
The business of it. You know what I mean? Like, I was replacing. My whole life I used to sell Sherm. You know what I mean? I used to sell PCP. So I had a house that used to do really well. So I wanted to replace that business. And I liked rap because it was therapeutic.
Yeah.
Like, explaining all the stuff we was going through, it was like getting it off my chest. I didn't feel like, it's like a therapist. The mic was like a therapist.
Exactly.
And so I just loved it at that. I didn't love it, but it helped. It helped me. Then it paid me.
Yeah.
And then, like, I got in it, made really great money, and I was going around the world seeing stuff and doing all kinds of crazy shit, and looked up one day and really had to make a choice. Is this what I want to do? And Once I set off in that whole kind of pilgrimage because of learning what records, hip hop, and marketing was, it bit me and I loved it. And then the money just stopped mattering. Everything about it just became, let me just execute. Let me do the fundamentals. I love it. I fuck with it.
Being on the West Coast, though, man, I mean, what was the music that first intrigued you, though?
Oh, man, shit. So everybody from L.A., if you grew up in the 80s, right, you heard all East Coast stuff.
Yeah.
You heard all the LLs, Fat Boys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? All that stuff. We got N.W.A. early.
Yeah.
We got Tidy T and Spade early.
Yeah.
DJ Quick before everybody
else.
Come on
now.
And then Death Row happened, and that was the end of every time.
That damn Death Row. What was it like watching Death Row do his thing from the firsthand experience as a youngster, though, man?
You didn't really... Okay, so as a young person, you didn't really trip what was happening as much as it was happening. Because we already had Too Short, right? We had E-40. We had stuff that was successful.
Yeah.
But we didn't realize how much more successful Death Row was about to take hip-hop in general.
Exactly.
So when Dre happened with the Chronic, I remember that.
Yeah.
And it was like a dope time. Like, you would hear the music, you're like, damn, this is representing what we see every day.
That's right.
And you see everybody else talking about it. And then Boys in the Hood, the movie, came out.
Facts.
So you're like, okay, then Cube is doing damage. And then Snoop happens, and that's where you're like, okay, this is different. You know what I mean? That's when you knew it was different, and you knew the world that fell in love with West Coast street
agriculture. I mean, speaking of Too Short, though, I mean, that Super Sport dropped that visual for that thing, yeah, sir. I mean, break that banger down to me. How did that collab come about?
Man, my boy Pun. Shout out to Ace Boy Pun.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Ace Boy's Worldwide Podcast at Home. It's a dope live stream.
Yeah.
My man Pun is somebody that's a really dope A&R, and he put the record together for me.
Yeah.
He was like, man, how we don't got a song with Too Short? And I was like, well, let's make one. So he got the beat together. Shout out to Tone Bone, who made it.
Yeah.
Really great producer from the land.
Mm.
And we knocked it out, and Short was like, man, we going to do a video? And I was like, yeah, we going to do a video.
Yeah.
So I kind of tapped into my street racing roots. Most people don't know I've been racing cars my whole life.
Yeah.
So I tapped into that and had fun, and it was dope to have that project with Short like that.
When you think about that street racing, though, man, I mean, what was it that made you get into street racing?
Oh, it's illegal.
Yeah.
I'm just one of them
types. Just go break the law.
Whatever it is. You know what I mean? Like, and I know that sounded a bit crazy, but, you know, we black in America. Last thing we got business doing is following every rule.
Facts.
It's a dope history of street racing that I'm working on a documentary for, so people will enjoy it.
I mean, when it comes to street racing in Cali, though, I mean, how big is it and how often is this stuff occurring?
Every week.
Okay.
Not the donuts.
Okay.
Not shout out to the takeover scene.
Yeah.
Shout out to all those scenes. But I mean, genuine quarter mile, eighth mile street racing. It's huge. It's a huge culture. Once a week, it's happening. It's been like that for as long as I've been alive.
Mm. Now, when we talk about culture and just stuff being huge, you was on my boy Court podcast, and you said something about Drake and hip hop.
Oh, yeah.
What were your thoughts on that when you saw that it went viral? And did you want to clarify it a bit from how you felt about it?
Well, I don't think it really needed much clarification. Somewhere along the line, it's like there's a problem with somebody that I watch come into business and be successful that I'm happy for.
Yeah.
It's not true. But hip hop is for ghetto people to express themselves artistically.
That's right.
It's made millionaires. It's changed people's life from the ghetto. I'm not mad at no middle class person using it.
Yeah.
But don't confuse it with what this is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And all I was saying is Drake wouldn't be hip hop. He'd be mainstream rap. He always was.
Yeah.
But people took that as if I don't like him or he doesn't make great music. And some of this shit is ridiculous.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? But at the end of the day, you know, this is the kind of the responsibility, you know, we bear as hip hop artists and representatives of a culture. So everybody ain't going to agree with it. And I'm right and they wrong.
Okay. When you think about 50 years of hip hop, do you think we're going to get another 50 years out of hip hop the way it's going?
I don't know if it's going to look the way it looked for the first 50.
Ooh. Talk to me, Glasses.
I just think like rock and roll. I think if you keep allowing people that don't represent where we come from, then guess what? If you got to start investing money, just like jazz look like Kenny G now.
Yeah.
Just like rock and roll look hella white right now.
Yeah.
You'll never see a black face again because guess what? The powers that be gonna invest their money with what sells the easiest.
Mm.
And now you won't have a black rock star. At one time, rock was all black.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's not a nigga in sight. At one time, jazz was all black. Now it's not a nigga in sight for the most part. Shout out to Terrence Martin and the homies. But it just goes through these phases where people want to invest in financially what makes sense. So if we allow people to say what they do is hip hop just because they're emulating a style of delivery like rap, or they're wearing a certain outfit, or they're using a certain lingo that sounds like us, and then that's all it takes to be hip hop, then it is going to be white as a motherfucker in 20 years.
What about us as a culture, though? What responsibility and accountability do we take to keep it going as far as encouraging the youth to continue with hip-hop? Because, like I was saying earlier, the issue that I'm having is that I'm not seeing the kids engaging in rap and the kind of rap that will push the culture forward to where they're displaying talent. I'm not seeing the rap artists. I'm seeing a lot of rappers, but I'm not seeing the rap artists anymore. What do you think happened to that? Or am I just in my own world
complaining? No, you're right, but I think the thing is you got the blame on the wrong people.
Okay.
It's the producers.
Ooh.
DJs and producers run hip hop. I don't give a fuck what Spotify, Apple, or Tidal do. Shout out to Jason, shout out to Ebro, all the good people that work at all these streaming sites.
Yeah.
It is the DJ slash producer's job to usher in the next era of artists. Producers and DJs teach rappers how to be artists. They show rappers how to finish records. And if you don't have that connection happening with this wave of producer slash DJ producing the next group of kids, then you're going to have people that's doing anything.
You know what? Now I'm mad, Glasses, because I needed to rip what you just said and upload it to Instagram right damn now.
Right now.
I got to give it to him right now. Because, I mean, that literally is the issue. And you solved that right there, sir. So now I want to talk about your career, though, man, and getting into the game, being around Black Wall Street and Cash Money and stuff like that. What was that like for you being around those teams?
Amazing, man. When I first started, I was with Game, Face, and G-Ride. Face and G-Ride were like instrumental in my career, my development.
Yeah.
My engineer Guido, who produced my first album as well, he was instrumental. Moving on to Cash Money, Birdman helped me see the business the way I thought it was based off of, you know, hustling and selling drugs. So he showed me how to do the business correctly. It was just, it just took time for me to understand the music part.
Yeah.
You know, I got really far without understanding anything about music or records. You know what I mean? Like anything. So shout out to Toomp and people who made the records for me.
Yeah.
My first hit records. And, you know, when I started understanding, which is 2011, which goes back to the beginning. So imagine being in something just doing business, not truly having a passion for it, not understanding the greatness of it as far as music. But that's also because some DJ slash producer didn't gravitate to me. You know, the guys that I needed. Don't get me wrong, Toomp came and gave me my first hit record.
Come on.
Battle Cat, I knew him, but none of them grabbed me and said, hey, youngster, like, come on. Hey, I got you. I'm going to show you. I'm going to, you know, this is what Snoop, this is what Dre did for Snoop. I got you. Warren G could produce, so he did it for himself.
Yeah.
Quick did it for Sugar Free. I got you.
Yeah.
Toomp did it for Tip. I got you.
Come on.
You know what I mean? Like, Shorty Red and Jeezy. You know
come
mean?
On.
This is how it worked. Zay and Gucci, this is how it worked.
Yeah.
So, if you don't have that and you're trying to put it together, and you have zero ideas, it's going to be tough. And it was tough for me. But shout out to Birdman. He made sure I always had plenty of money. He made sure I was always okay. And he got me the greatest looks possible. Same for Mac 10. It was just awesome.
Okay, when Toomp pulled up with the hit, though, man, I mean, what was that like when you said, okay, I got Tip producing this thing and we about to get on up out of here?
I didn't even think about it like that, man. Yeah. He was the first person that reached out to me.
My God.
You know what I mean? And it wasn't. And that's really kind of Atlanta to me in the whole. Like, Atlanta is like a place where they party hard as a motherfucker, but they work. They going to get up and go to work.
That's true.
They could have just went to sleep at 5, but they back up at 8.
That's
kind of the spirit of Atlanta. So even Toomp to notice who I was.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The South in general, Pimp C, different people to notice who I was. And Toomp, hey, man, you need to come on out to Atlanta. Let me make some records for you. And then to be in the studio with him. And then Akon, you know, my big brother Cam, Akon knows I'm around. And hey, I'm going to just stop by there and come drop a hook off for you.
Yeah, yeah.
This nigga the biggest nigga in the country. And he just come drop. That's Atlanta. Only type of magic like that cuz happened in Atlanta.
Yeah.
There's not another place in the motherfucking country that type of magic happened. I'm just in the studio with Toomp.
Yeah.
And then Akon, like, I'm going to come up in my Lamborghini and just drop this hook. And here's your first hit record.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so.
I mean, when the song hit, though, I mean, how did your life change having that hit up under your belt, though?
It didn't.
Talk to me.
It didn't because I couldn't really own it.
Mm.
Like, it was happening to me. I wasn't making it happen.
Ooh.
You know what I mean? And that's really how hip-hop has been for me.
Yeah.
Until I fell in love with it, which is how we get to Tupac Must Die and That Good in certain songs where I started making it happen.
Yeah.
See, before that, I would just make the hustle happen.
Yeah.
I would make the business acumen happen.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't make the art happen.
Yeah.
So Toomp and Akon blessing me.
Yeah.
So even when it's a smash hit record, it's on all the radio stations, I'm walking around, this happening to me.
Yeah.
How can I really claim it and make it mine?
Mm.
I could never get arrogant enough to own it. It was like, well, shit, okay.
Yeah.
Let's go. You know what I mean?
You spoke about Pimp C earlier, man. I mean,
first person in the industry to ever recognize me.
I mean, what did the pimp say to you, though, Glasses?
He did a radio interview, and he was like, I've been listening to this nigga named Glasses Malone, and this nigga hard, and this is, you know, and he just gave me all his love.
Yeah.
And it was like, there's the first signed artist that ever really you know, besides him and Dr. Dre. Dr. Dre said it to me, but Pimp said it to the world.
Okay, then.
And that was the first person to ever show me love. So if you look at Certified, if you look at my hoodie, it's a ghost pattern of Pimp on the actual jersey.
That's hard. Did you ever get a chance to chop it up with him?
No.
Oh, my God.
No, by the time, because at that time, I was really in the hood. So
yeah.
Like, it was no way. I wouldn't even knew nobody who knew Pimp.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I didn't have no connection in Texas like that. So when I got in the business, he had passed away.
Yeah.
But I remember this is when the Ozone Awards was popping in Houston.
Facts.
And I remember just saying rest in peace to the Pimp and going out there and Steven Jackson, his man, meeting him and fucking with Bun and just really just feeling the love. But, man, the South is a different place. And the people here is, you know, you need that authenticity with black folks here.
Yeah.
It keep you grounded.
Come on, man.
You know what I mean? So it was always hard for me to be arrogant. It always felt like the world was giving me something. Hip-hop was giving me something. And now I'm giving hip-hop everything.
When Dr. Dre says I'm rocking with your glasses, I mean, what keeps you from being arrogant then? That's so, Dr. Dre.
When I'm playing music for him and he like, I mean, this is what you should be doing for a living, it was more like, okay, maybe I can do maybe I can do this. If this nigga saying this, so let me give it my all. But it's hard to be arrogant because it wasn't something that I really understood. You know what I mean? Even now that I understand it, I'm certain in what I say. I'm not arrogant. Like, if even in the conversation about Drake or any other thing that people find polarizing, I'm confident in my studies.
That's right.
I'm only confident in my knowledge and information. I'm not confident in who I, like, I don't think I can whoop everybody's ass. Yeah. I fight everybody.
Come on now.
Everybody. So that's my confidence coming. I will stand up for myself.
Yeah.
My confidence come in my learning, my education, my information, reading, and having an idea of what happened before.
Exactly.
To know that I'm not the first person to have to do this.
Come on now.
Yeah.
You spoke earlier about Nipsey Hussle too, man.
That's my motherfucking nigga, man.
I mean, talk to me about Nip though, man, and what he meant to you and y'all relationship.
Man, just so me, Nip, and J-Rock put out our first CDs the same year, 2005.
My God.
Lawson Boy, White Lightning, and J-Rock is gonna kill me because I forgot the name of his first CD that I got still. But we all came out with our first CDs the same year.
Damn.
Shout out to Problem because he came out with his in 2006.
Yeah.
But we all dropped our first CDs the same year. And we were all a part of different crews, but we all messed with each other.
That's
and
right.
Me and Nip relationship always been solid from the first day.
Mm-hmm.
He was passionate about business the way I'm passionate about hip hop at this point. Like, he knew everything about all the business players. Like, if it could be a business hall of fame, cuz would have been in there.
Mm.
You know, everybody, I've heard all the stuff about legendaries, Nip legends and music. This nigga would be in the business hall of fame. You got to put this nigga picture next to Rockefeller. You know what I mean? Like, this is how this nigga mind was.
Yeah.
So, again, sometimes it's people trying to minimize who he was. Mm. And I get it. That's the normal thing. But sometimes we get a gift of another human being that's just bigger than anything we seen within us.
Yeah.
And Nip is one of them type niggas. Like, fuck the Music Hall of Fame. That nigga be in a Business Hall of Fame. Mm. You got to put his picture at Rockefeller and what's them other rich ass crackers? That nigga up there with them. He's a bad nigga.
How do you think hip hop would have changed had Nipsey had lived, man? Or what do you think the impact would have been that he would have been able to make?
I think, so Nip understood of taking us into different businesses.
Yeah.
Like we, something I've been saying and I haven't really said it publicly is hip hop is just getting too redundant.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And I don't mean it in the musical sense because that's happening, but fuck that. I'm talking about business.
Yeah.
Like, somebody came out with clothes 40 years ago. Russell Simmons, them 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, when are we going to start? When is Currency going to get a car lot?
Yeah.
I want Currency Chevrolet.
Yeah. Yeah.
This nigga a car nigga. I want Killer Mike's Chevrolet.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want Killer Mike's Ford. I want Carlos Miller's Buick.
I feel you.
I want us to invade all the spaces in corporate America. Hip hop has to keep colonizing corporate America with our colony. We keep colonizing corporate America's business places. Mm. Like Bun B got Trill Burgers.
Come on.
I can't wait to go eat there.
Exactly.
I can't wait till that's in L.A. and I'm able to go to Trill because I'm not spending another dime with none of these other folks but our folks. And I want us to have a space. I want certain niggas to have a donut shop.
Yeah.
A donut chain. You know what I mean? Ludacris to have Tyler Perry got his own film studio just like Ludacris should. Yo. Yep. I want all of us in hip hop to keep colonizing corporate America to show our power.
Exactly.
You know, it's a lot of power that comes from the ghetto, and we just got to keep expanding it. And that's what I think Nip represented. His ideas were like outside of the space of traditional hip hop business. So he was always invading different spaces in corporate America as far as who he was.
So now when Nip passes, it's also part of a string of murders that would go on to happen in hip-hop.
Yeah.
What do you think about that dark cloud in hip-hop that kind of occurred over the last 10 years or so to where we were losing the next generation, too? Because that was the other issue that I was having with hip-hop. I was like, I don't know if anybody realizes this, but the next generation is not even here to get the baton because they're going to jail on RICOs or they're, you know, passing away.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts on that?
Well, you live and you die.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Some of us get, you know, 100 years. Some of us get 4 years. Mm. Nip and Jesus got, you know, 30-something years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Some people, you live and you die. But long as you take every day and make a change, like Nip, like, his legacy, his spirit is much more infectious than his person. Mm-hmm. His person was influential, but his spirit right now got niggas acting right.
Yeah.
It's a lot of niggas that shifted how they think and decided what was important. Like niggas is like really like, oh, I'm finna go. I can go out and start my own business. Nigga Nip, you know, I like they read about Nip like they read about Jesus, and they aspire to live out the best version. So if it took my boy passing away and not fucking around with this lame ass world, you know what I mean? I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I feel bad for his family and his children, but he meant so much to everybody. And in death, it's bringing out greatness in a lot of other people. Tons of more people.
Exactly.
Like, I see people who start businesses. They in my DM, like, man, Nip encouraged me. And it's like, that's great.
Yeah.
And that's what living is all about.
Exactly.
He used to say something, right? To inspire is the highest act in humanity, right?
Exactly.
That's something that rings for him so true because it's really, he inspired a generation.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it's tough. You know, you think about Dolph, you know, you think about Tate, you think about all these people, but it's like, you gotta live like you know we could die tomorrow. And it's not about, you know, this hip hop or black, because that's not what's going on, man. These are breakdown in human fabric. Like, this is happening right now in Israel.
Come on.
This is happening right now in Russia and Ukraine. We don't even talk about that no more.
Exactly.
Human beings gonna fight and we gonna die.
Yeah.
But if you live every day like you know you can die, man, then your life ain't in vain. So
with you.
Dolph did an incredible job. Nip did an incredible, one of the greatest jobs in the history of men.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Take off. It's some great things that happen. So we got to celebrate these people's lives while they're here. And you make sure you live like you might not be here tomorrow, because somebody going to look at your life and you might can really give somebody else something special even when you're not here.
Okay. When we talk about celebrating no glasses, I mean, when you look over your career, what was the most celebratory time that you had where you said, you know what, I'm having a damn good time putting out this music right
Tupac
now?
Tupac Must Die. When that happened, 2019, man, it was like, that was the first time I felt like I added a brick in the foundation that's hip-hop.
Yeah.
Like, people going to look back and always talk about that specific song because I pushed the fabric. Mm. I pushed it. Like, I kind of added to the fabric. I extended the legacy a little bit more to give people a perspective of street urban culture and morality. Yeah. Where they, like, people was like, damn, is that normal? Does that happen? You know what I mean? And if it could happen to somebody we celebrate as one of the greatest, you know, human beings that ever live in Tupac, and nobody's above the program, then you understand a little bit more about how we grow up morality-wise and why, you know, respecting each other is important and how shit can get if people feel disrespected.
You ain't never lied about that right there, Glasses. Yeah. Now, when you looking right now at the 50 years of hip-hop celebrations, you from the West Coast, man.
Yeah.
MC Hammer said he didn't feel like going out there celebrating with everybody because he felt like, you know what, I don't feel like being fake with y'all. Yeah. Y'all hated on me my whole damn career, and I'm going to just let y'all have that. Me personally, I loved Hammer growing up back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I'll never understand either.
But I think we was kids, so we looked at Hammer like a superhero. This nigga was a shit.
He was a superhero, a cartoon character.
But that's why hip hop is for the kids.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, as an adult, we celebrated too, but like what Hammer meant more to us.
Exactly.
I seen Hammer perform. Me and my old lady go to a show. I seen Hammer perform, and it fucked me up. I felt like a little kid again. And he didn't miss a step. I follow him on Twitter, and he tweets me back inside. Like, I be fucked up. I'm like, this nigga Hammer DM me back tweet me back. So I'm not mad at him. You know what I mean? He can have his... Chris said the same thing. Yeah. Shout out to KRS-One. He's like, man, I'm not fucking with the power structure. So I'm not upset that if Hammer don't want it. It's his right to say. And they weren't really fair to Hammer.
Yeah.
They weren't really fair and courteous to Hammer and treating him with the respect he deserved as an entertainer and as a great representation of blackness in America.
Come on.
So, you know, if he still got a chip on his shoulder, man, shit, that's cool. Yeah. They ought to do something special for him by himself.
Ooh.
Apologize.
Yeah.
Give him a lifetime. Treat that man like you owe him versus you gonna tolerate him now.
Oh, you snap with that though, Glasses. You snap with it because, see, I wanted Hammer to go out there and crank that thing up.
Yeah.
But they do need to roll out the carpet for him and KRS. Because even with what KRS was saying, he was like, they didn't have the elements of hip hop in there. But then I was thinking, KRS, when you go up there, just tell him, I want to add these elements to my performance and you bring it in there.
He know they not going to let him, but see, this is...
Why wouldn't they let him, though?
Because it's limited time, space, and money, right? But this is our fault when we let other people do it.
Come on now.
We supposed to be putting on our own 50 years and selling it to them.
Yeah, ooh.
We ain't supposed to let the Grammys put on. We supposed to put it together and then sell it to the Grammys.
Facts.
And then none of us participate unless you buy it from us.
Come on.
But as long as we allow people to give us the diet version of Pepsi, ain't nobody finna add no calorie in there.
Which makes me come with this spontaneous question because, I mean, Versus rolled so much hell during COVID. This would have been the time that Versus is supposed to be shining during the 50th celebration of hip-hop, man. I mean, how do you feel about that platform kind of going silent now? When it was one of the biggest, craziest platforms of the last 3 years.
Man, shit live and die.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Good things come and go. You know what I'm saying? And the Swiss and Tim don't see it, you know. Listen, I'm sure it's a lot of particulars that have to happen in that shit. The productions were really started getting elaborate.
Yeah.
At home, it was simple. And during the COVID, nigga, it was a camera phone, nigga, and some music. These niggas start having concerts and rent venues and shit. So, you know, when you bring in business can get hella strenuous. So, but I think hip hop, again, it goes back to that point to where I was saying, I think it's our job to go sell these people us and stop letting them buy us. It's a difference when we selling. So if somebody coming to buy your car, it's different than you selling your car.
Exactly. After Tupac Must Die, was there any other time that you felt like, you know what, I done peaked, I done did what I came to do, and I think I might want to get into something else other than hip-hop. What was it that kept you in the game and motivated?
That's it.
Okay.
Once I started 2011, 2018, 19, when I started learning, that made me... Because when I first got into it, I had a plan to go buy a job and be a longshoreman after I was finished with rap and make me a couple hundred thousand, go ride off in the sunset, get me back on Crenshaw and street racing and living my life like a real L.A. nigga.
Yeah.
But, when I fell in love with it 2011, 19, I started studying. It became something to be a part of.
Yeah.
Black music in general.
Yeah.
Like, I used to have Motown stickers on the back of my vinyls and CDs and didn't have a real appreciation for what that meant. I was a part of Cash Money Records, and I knew what it meant, but I didn't understand it. I was in the studio with Lil Wayne making a Carter 3 and never flinched. I watched Game make the documentary, never flinched. I watched Kendrick shoot Michael Jordan and work on Good Kid, Mad City, and never flinch. It never meant shit to me. It was like, okay, we making records. And now I look back and I'm like, damn, I missed out on something that was incredible.
Yeah.
I was there, but my soul wasn't present. So when I started to learn what I was a part of and legacy-wise, what it could mean and what it could do for other people, it changed everything.
I mean, getting in there with Wayne and jamming though at the same time, what was that like when you were on Cash Money and then also recording with Wayne, one of the ghosts?
I wanted to quit.
Hell no!
Yeah, dog. That's how good that motherfucker was. You know what I mean? I'm not lying, bro. Like, I grew up, you know, again, like I said, I grew up in the 80s, man. Feel me? I'm a toddler in the 80s. I'm a kid in the 80s. I grew up in the 90s. Juvenile, you Cash Money Records?
Yeah.
Juvenile Big Timers.
Come on, man.
That's the pinnacle. it's 400 degrees.
Facts.
So I see Lil Wayne. Lil Wayne was a little kid that was, you know, with them. You know, he's younger than me, so it's a little nigga that was with the Juvie now.
Exactly.
And I'm in the studio, and I remember walking in and thinking to myself, like, I was a pretty decent rapper. I'm good. I'm all right. I might be a B minus. You know what I mean? I might be a game is an A. I'm a B minus.
Yeah,
I ain't bad.
Exactly.
Till I start going in the studio with that nigga. And then I realized I was on the verge of failing.
Hell no.
This nigga's that good, girl. I'm not lying. I ain't putting nothing on it. On 7th Street Crib, I ain't putting nothing on it. That's how good this motherfucker is. This motherfucker's incredible. Not only is he going to give you the best verses, he going to make a great hook.
Yeah.
And then he going to do it all fast. He gonna do 10 songs, and 7 of the 10 is gonna be fantastic. And then they only gonna pick 2 of the 7. Like, this is how good this mother, how disgustingly great he is at this.
Yeah.
And it made me, I had to this is all part of the reason why I started in 2011 to go through that, because I had to make a choice.
Yeah.
This was either, you know, fight or flight. I was like, fight back. You know what I mean? This nigga, I'm telling you, man, this nigga. I don't know if people get it. You know, shout out to everybody who understand it. I know you supposed to think you good. I'm sure the best niggas that rap think they rap.
Come
but if
on.
You don't look at this motherfucker and be like, oh, this little nigga different.
Exactly.
This little nigga Michael Jackson.
Come on.
This little nigga Jackson 5 with the Hot Boys.
Come on.
Then he come out with these old Thrillers and the Carters and shit. It's a bad motherfucker. So I decided to fight, and I had to get better. And you had to have a passion, because you can't be as good as Wayne and not have a passion for it.
Facts.
So as I started learning, things started happening. And, you know, people right now talk about how good I am, but it's like, yeah, you get your ass whooped by a master, you know, sensei up in this
exactly.
motherfucker. And, you know, you in the studio, he like, you don't even smoke weed. Why are you writing your shit down? You be like, nigga, you do this shit out your mind? You know what I mean? So, cuz is just incredible, man. And I mean, I know people half-ass give him his flowers, but he's much better than everybody thinks he is. Much, much better.
Where is that with Lil Wayne and Cameron, though, man? That banger, how did y'all put that thing together?
Man, randomly, every New York legend was showing me love at a time when everybody at home was more, like, disconnected.
Private is not respected in his own hometown, man.
The streets love me, but the artists, I felt, and to their credit, I hadn't paid no dues. I was the genuine article of home, but as far as this art go, I ain't paid no dues like that.
Okay, then.
So I respect them now. I get it now. But at that time, you know, I was working my hardest. I was trying my best.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe somebody could have said, okay, Glasses, let me show you what you don't know. Instead of just letting you just walk around in a dark room. But it wasn't like that in New York, man. Cam was showing me love.
Yeah.
New York media was showing me love. Yeah. Rest in peace, K. Slay.
Yes, sir.
Everybody who did amazing things for me. And Cam was one of them niggas I reached out to. He was like, yeah, I got you, little homie. It's nothing. And somebody who I hold in such a high regard and just think is the greatest, and he just was cool to me.
Yeah.
And so, obviously, Tune heard Cam, he's like, oh, I'm getting on that. You know, he fuck with Cam.
Yeah.
So, you know, a song like that, I didn't know nothing about music or enough about anything to really truly value it until now.
Yeah.
So now, it's funny because I'm working on the release of Fuck Glasses, the re-release, because I never put it on streaming apps and a CD.
Yeah.
And a shout out to my man EP who produced the whole Cassidy's album. Cancel These Nuts album, we kind of went back in and reimagined a couple songs.
Yeah.
And we was touching on that song. So then when it comes on streaming service, it'll be dope.
Can you speak about, you know, you and EP, y'all chemistry when y'all get together, man?
I didn't know it was going to be this, but I should have known, because in 2008, me and EP did a song for the soundtrack called Bastards of the Party about gangbanging. It's a really dope soundtrack. It's Bones documentary from L.A., Blood, the notorious Blood dude that be in the films.
Yeah.
And we did a song that was really dope. And every time we worked, we always had a chemistry.
Yeah.
It was easy. So when we talked about doing a whole album, we just tested the waters to see where we would mix at.
Yeah.
And we found a space that was, like, really incredible. Mm. This really different place that's not even normal for his production.
Yeah.
Like, he's such a diverse producer, but this was some place that he didn't even, you know, he hadn't went before, you know, with Scarface.
Yeah.
Or he didn't go here with Game, or he didn't go here with Kanye. This was a special place for me and him as, you know, with him being a producer.
I feel that. I mean, for you though, Glasses, when it comes to those studio sessions, which one of the studio sessions are the most memorable to you where you felt like, okay, I'm blacking out in here though?
As a rapper. So Kanye should have never married that chick as a songwriter. Kanye should have never married that bitch. But for sure, I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Now I'm at another level as a songwriter.
Yeah.
As an MC, I don't think I've had that moment yet.
Oh.
No, like, because I think at that point I knew I was a really quality, good MC. But I think that moment is coming. I think I'm going to end up being on a song with somebody I really think is special.
Yeah.
And I think everybody's going to be like, oh, yeah, this nigga is really, really special as an MC. So I don't think that moment has happened yet in my first 15 years as a pro.
Okay. When you think of impact, though, what kind of an impact does Glasses want to make on the game and the culture moving forward?
I don't want y'all to be as ignorant about gangbanging.
Well, break that down to me, because I don't know.
No, because I think there's so many simple falsehoods about it that people take and internalize and make it real.
Okay.
Like, it's not about colors.
Mm.
And I think people think that because I'm combating Hollywood. Like, so brothers around the rest of the country look at brothers in L.A. like they just ignorant.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, oh, they tripping over this color or this. And it's like, no, these are real situations between men.
Come on.
So my job is to give a much clearer understanding of L.A. street urban culture or L.A. hip-hop lifestyle so you can see why we feel that way.
Okay.
There's a song on this album called Sundays in L.A. The last song is a bonus song.
Okay, then.
And it talks about what makes low riding special, right? It talks about how that's like Crenshaw Boulevard is the black country club where brothers from the communities, different communities, come to show off all they hard work that they put into a car.
That's right.
And it's different people from different gangs, people who don't even get along, but they all there in fellowship. Mm. And you don't know that exists in L.A. because nobody's told you. Mm. You've only got the surface part of it.
Yeah.
You would think that you don't realize when you look at Boys in the Hood, Ferris and Doughboy is on the same street and it's not a problem till it's a problem.
Mm.
It wasn't on sight. It didn't matter that one's a Blood and one's a Crip.
Yeah.
Like, we not just a bunch of ignorant people. These are really circumstances that create these situations between men, and sometimes it leads into these kind of battles and wars.
Okay.
So my job is to give y'all a much clearer understanding of Los Angeles street urban culture. Like, you shouldn't be, as a black person in Atlanta, as a black person in Detroit or Flint, a black person in Brooklyn, you shouldn't be this disconnected to where you like, it's this simple. It's much more complex. It's more nuanced than that.
How do you feel about gang culture across the country, though? Because, I mean, you have the Bloods and the Crips of the West Coast, but then it kind of gets bastardized across the country.
It was inevitable.
Talk to
just
me
like,
about
like
that.
Just like L.A., they got traps.
Yeah.
You can't tell these niggas they don't got traps.
Yeah.
They tell these niggas. One of the most successful businesses in Los Angeles is a business called Trap Kitchen.
What?
Shout out to Spank.
That's hard.
So we all share. Ghetto people share.
But then also, I say that to say, whereas the culture, the gangbanging culture go to another state, but they will take it as a color situation versus how it was where it originated from.
I mean, you got to use some level of thought.
And I agree.
It's okay to have the title.
Exactly.
Right? But you got to run it based off your program. Everybody like cocaine.
Yeah.
That don't mean every neighborhood could grow coca plants. You know what I mean? So you gotta make the finished product work for you.
Exactly.
And so long as people, wherever they at, making a finished product, a Crip in the Blood, and work for them in their community, that's fine. But if you think you understand it and you think it's just about fighting somebody, you missed out.
How are the black and brown relations over there in Cali now?
So it depends on where you from. Some people is harsher.
Yeah.
Where we from is the shit.
Yeah.
Well, in Watts, you know what I mean? We fuck with, we all one. I've been eating ceviche, octopus ceviche, since I was a little kid.
Okay.
A bundega soup.
Yeah.
I've been, you know, this is how we grow up.
Yeah.
In some places, you know, people fight over those few resources.
Mm.
As long as everybody poor, it's going to be some fights.
Exactly.
So it's not as simple as, oh, you black and somebody's brown.
Yeah.
Or you black and somebody's this. It's like, no, they got into it over somebody stole some dope. And nobody's telling that truth.
And they just so happen to be black and
brown.
And
you hear people like, well, it's a racial war. No, this shit is about 100 birds.
Exactly.
About to kill everybody over these kilos, nigga. killing people. Grandma, y'all stole these kilos. So, again, these nuanced situations that people don't know about.
Yeah.
You only hear, people think it's a racist thing. Oh, the Mexicans and the black people in L.A. don't like each other.
Yeah.
Like, no, nigga, this is deep.
Yeah.
These are real situations. Everybody poor. There's only so much shit in these communities, so people start to fight over misunderstandings and different things. But where we from is love.
Okay.
We fuck with our guys.
Okay. You know what I'm when it comes to hip-hop and now the RICO, okay, we seen them coming down to New York, Casanova up there catching it, you know, down here in Atlanta, Thug and Lucci, across the board, man. I mean, how do you feel like, you know, the whole penitentiary pipeline is starting to infiltrate hip-hop as far as getting the big wigs and bringing them in?
That's one of them systemic moves that these white people put these moves together to take down the mafia.
Yeah.
And this is what I be saying. Whenever they pull something, you know it's going to be used on us the most.
Yeah.
Dang, it's so many mafias that ain't been took down, but every last rap label click. You know what I mean? And that's not to, you know, to disregard nothing that no nigga had going on in Atlanta.
Yeah.
But goddamn, it ain't that goddamn organized. Yeah. How you even make it over? These niggas is having fun. Look, kids partying and drinking and fucking around. Yeah, they got some problems. If you want to arrest them for some crimes they committed,
yeah,
they got into some shootouts. I get it. Yeah. Come on, man. This nigga, these ain't John Gotti, man. Mm. It ain't no 40 murders. Sammy the Bull Gravano got 26 years. He done murdered 50 people.
And he free now.
And y'all trying to compare that to the shit that these people got going on, man? Come on, man. Let's just keep it justice. It's like with R. Kelly. Like, R. Kelly did some things, man. He's supposed to be in jail 7, 8, 9 years. He's supposed to have therapy, come on home after that, kids get back concert, marry some old lady, yep, get his life together. Why this nigga got 30 and 40 years?
Woo.
They weaponized false black outrage.
Yeah.
And I call it false black outrage, and they use it as a way to take down black men. They doing it with Puff right now.
What are your thoughts on this whole Puff situation, man?
Bro, my thing is there's no criminal allegations. There's no criminal complaints. Look, if we saying this nigga is a nasty nigga, I'd imagine so. He party, he been having some money. Ain't no telling what type of drugs cuz done got on to. Yeah. I'm sure he didn't party the way cuz party.
Yeah.
But are we really thinking this Puff is running around raping people? Come on, man. But guess what? It don't matter. It don't matter that there's no criminal charge. Guess what they doing, cuz? They pulling all the money from this nigga. All these companies he built and stocks he built and all that, they taking that back. And we allowing them to weaponize our fake outrage. Mm. Oh, we mad? No, we not. Bitch, cuz we still playing Puff album.
Yeah.
We still playing R. Kelly album. You know what I mean? We not that fucking mad, right? What we want is justice. Mm. So if Puff, is there something to bring him up on justice? Fine, but why is it always they start, The liquor company taking back his stocks. They taking back his money.
Yeah.
Kanye take back the money. Wait a minute, bro. Cuz built these things.
Yeah.
This brother built these things. And we sit back thinking that's justice. Sitting back like, man, you ignorant. I get so mad when we let these white people do these brothers like that all some false sense of trying to be righteous.
Okay, Glasses, I got to ask you this, though, too, in the same breath. In a situation like Puff, you have a lot of fans or just people out here in the streets that want to see him go down just because he was successful.
That's all.
What do you say to the people that are on the sidelines that want to, you know, pile on Diddy and say, no, I want to see him lose everything, but they ain't even got nothing, but you want to see this man lose everything, and you really don't even have a fact or a clue to your opinion?
You just answered the question. Nigga ain't got nothing. Look, you got to earn your haters.
Yeah, ooh.
I literally tweeted that before I got here. I earned every last one of my haters.
Mm.
I deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
So he deserve it. But it's not the haters that I'm mad at. It's not the people going through tough times that are passing their shortcomings on to Puff for being successful. Yeah. It's the people who he actually validated. It's the people who he actually helped change their life. It's the people he gave opportunities to that's allowing this shit. The bodyguards, the people that's, this ain't the time, nigga.
Yeah.
This the time to be a nigga. It's the time to be black. Stop being, this ain't the time. Not when these white people is attacking all this hard work and all of these companies he built. This ain't the time.
Mm.
This ain't the time to jump. This ain't the time to be a woman. Cause you like, oh, well, the way him and Cassie did their thing is, This ain't that time. This the time to be black. Mm-hmm. It's time to realize they about to take every dime this nigga made, and if they could do that to one nigga, they gonna do it to every nigga. There ain't a nigga who has made it out of this corporate world that went out unscathed.
Come on.
You mean to tell me every black man that's doing well is a fucked up person? Ain't no nigga dying and shit. Come on, man. We don't even remember some of the shit these allegations these brothers did fought. Yep. And we not, you know, I'm not doing that shit. I'm not doing that with them.
Yep.
And if nobody else, if none of these hoe ass niggas gonna stand up, I only fuck with Puff twice or three times.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna make sure there's one black voice in the room, cause that's like, hey, y'all can't take this nigga money.
Yeah.
Look, if y'all got a criminal situation, charge cuz criminally. Yep. All them civil charges with these people coming after cuz money, that's convenient as fuck. I'm not for it. All these fake ass people, I'm not fucking with none of that shit. I'm not fucking with none of that shit where we allow white people to lynch black people like they doing something for us. They not. Bitch, we ain't never lynched Puff. Because if Puff walked in these niggas' hair shop right now, y'all be combing cuz hair.
Come on.
You know what I mean? So I'm just not with that. That shit bothers me when they weaponize black outrage and use it as a way to financially lynch another brother. I'm not with that.
It also angers me, though, Glasses, when I see the outrage just coming from the sheeple. Instead of folks having their own mind and saying, you know what, let me dig into this. Let me see what the angles are, what this might be. You know, a lot of times, just based off of media and public perception and opinion, folks want to just nail them to the cross because they heard 50 other folks screaming the same thing, man. So how do you feel about just people having their own damn mind in hip-hop, too, to be able to sit back and, you know, really evaluate situations?
Sheep need shepherd.
Yeah.
So it's up to B. It's up to Glasses. We the shepherds. It's wolves and shepherds. Wolves and shepherds is going to move sheep.
Yeah.
Sheep ain't going to develop mine overnight. Mm-hmm. They not going to develop mine ever.
I'm with you.
You know what I mean? But it's up to the shepherd and the wolves. Mm. So wolves is going to move them into a space to where they can profit off of it.
Yeah.
Fifth is a wolf.
Yeah.
I'm a shepherd. So I'm going to move people to move into the right place. You know what I mean? So it's just, it's different things. Like, everybody got their personal wars and battles, but it's up to us to move people into the spaces that we want them to go, especially sheep. But we can't also get mad that they, you know, they going to flock where they going to flock. We all know it. That's how we're able to get in position in the first place as a marketing person. That's how Puff was able to be successful, because people are sheep.
Yeah.
So it could also mean that people could want your demise because they sheep.
Facts. With 50 being on the other side of the spectrum, though, how do you feel about him saying, you know what, take him down, that's what's going on?
He a wolf. And him and Puff got their personal problems. I can't really argue about two men that got a problem.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck. I don't want Fifth or Puff to lose nothing they built for these white folks.
Yeah.
That's just where I'm at. So I can't really comment on their argument. I don't know what the fuck they had going. Who knows what happened between them niggas?
Come on.
But I'm also not cool with y'all motherfuckers not charging this nigga criminally, but y'all trying to take every dime or taking all his stocks. I don't want that to happen to no black man that built up these white companies that they owe us this money. Get these people their money.
Exactly. When it comes to just young men growing up in urban environments, Glasses, what do you think somebody could have said to you to keep you from hustling or trapping like you did early on in the game to steer you down a different path?
Yeah, I'd have had a free ride to college.
Because
I was capable, but college cost money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I was trying to figure out how to get some money. And my mom went to prison at the time. We didn't have a bunch of money. Mm. I mean, she had barely came home. So I was hustling to actually make money to go to school. And the money became so substantial that going to school, you know, you're an ignorant mind at 17, 18 years old. You're not thinking fully. I'm not even thinking about 4 years later. I'm thinking about tomorrow, and then you start making money, and you like, okay, pharmacists make roughly $1,200 a week at that time, $60,000 a year.
Yeah.
I'm making $1,200 in 2 and 3 days. You know what I mean? And you're not thinking at that young mind about what it looks like, prison, possibly death, all this shit. You just like, I need to make money, because your whole life you were taught to make money.
Yeah.
So for me specifically, if I'd have got a free ride to school, then I'd have been at Azusa Pacific to be a pharmacist. But once money became a play and I found a way to make some money, you know what I mean? And then that money started being real money.
Yeah.
Now we got decisions to make on an 18-year-old mind.
When you said your mama was in prison, you know, a lot of folks had to deal with their fathers being in prison. I mean, how did it impact you with your mama being in there?
You know what? I don't know if I could tell you it's different.
Yeah.
But For years, I didn't think it impacted me, but I guess it did because my mom made sure I never experienced any hardships. You know what I mean? My mom and my dad, you know, broke up when I was younger, and my dad was a dope dad, but my mom made sure every day of my life I didn't feel any stress.
Yeah.
And when stress, you know, when you're a kid, you don't really care about much of shit, but once you start getting 14, 15, 16, you start seeing, you know, even just to be appealing to girls, what kind of clothes you're wearing, how much money you're making, you got a car, all these things start, you know, they start to come into play where money start mattering.
Yeah.
And now that's when the decisions get crazy.
Facts.
You know, the desire to be cool or the desire to earn start mattering at that time. So it definitely created a space to where, you know, my immature mind was able to go out and solve a problem as much as I could solve it, not knowing I was creating a greater one.
How did that impact you and her relationship, though, man?
Nothing at all. I always respected her.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I always probably over-respect. I saw an Instagram video where it was a lady on drugs, and she was high, and she was sitting with her young son, and her 10-year-old son was slapping her in the face, and was screaming at her because, you know, he was so upset, and he was throwing a tantrum, man.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck what your mama do. You don't got no motherfucking business putting your hands on your fucking mama.
Exactly.
So maybe it strengthened that because my mom is like, I love her, and I know what she did it for us.
Yeah.
I could have some critical assessments and be like, you could have did with less, but she didn't want us growing up without shit, so she did what she did. So it made me respect mothers a lot more than I ever did.
Your perspective on the rap game when you first got in there versus where you at right now, man. I mean, was it everything that you thought it would be? Did it turn out to be a little bit more wilder, or was it just a day-by-day situation?
So when I first got into it, I thought everybody was me.
Mm.
And I realized some of these niggas is really dope ass artists. Yeah. These are really talented person. They may not be the greatest gang member in the world or the greatest D-boy, but these niggas are spectacular poets and shit. And who you are in the streets don't matter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You actually got to be good at this shit. So that was something that I realized was hella different.
Okay, then.
Maybe people who I looked at as a little bit more like they was bullshit, they were just misunderstood. Like somebody like DJ Quick, I thought he was just wild, but I think he's just frustrated. You know, somebody like Snoop, who I looked at as right around the corner, is really some kind of magnificent other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like Snoop is hella personable and you fuck with him, but he really has this different innate quality that's insane.
Yeah.
My respect for all of the people that have done it has changed. Because at first, I didn't really give a fuck. I didn't respect them as nothing, but they just playing the music. But as I got older, I realized these niggas are really brilliant and genius men. This ain't no punk shit.
Yeah.
So, like, my respect for what it is has really went through the roof.
You spoke earlier about DJ Quick, though, man. Sure. I mean, what do you feel like he brought to the game? Because even an A-Town boy such as myself, I was bumping some DJ Quick back in the day, too, sir.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what was it like for you seeing him going crazy during that heyday time? And what do you think he brought to the game? And do you think that he gets the respect that he deserves one of the forefathers out
it's
there?
It's impossible. He could never get the respect he deserved.
Okay.
It's impossible. Because you would have to understand music to understand what he does. You would have to understand the history. You would have to understand Michael Jackson's, you know, you have to understand what Rick James meant to Michael Jackson and Prince.
Yeah.
To understand what Quick means to music and West Coast music in general. And most people ain't gonna get that.
Yeah.
And that's probably the most frustrating thing for him. You know, a lot of people see him wilding out and tripping, but you don't understand what he sees. He sees everything he is and everybody else making tons of money off of everything that he started and he is. And that's a frustrating thing. That's a frustrating thing. I couldn't imagine what it's like to be him. You know what I mean? So, but he could never get the respect he deserved because nobody, like I'm barely starting to, like I've been understanding it for the last 5-6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And every day I learn something more and more to where it's like, damn, this nigga is really like Rick James. Like Rick James became like people don't know how great Rick James is as a musical talent.
Exactly.
People think Rick, like I was explaining it to someone, that Rick James, Prince and Michael Jackson took a lot from Rick James.
Yeah.
Right? And people couldn't understand it because they seen some stories about the keyboard, and they don't realize he took that keyboard and made a record bigger than all Prince's records.
Yeah.
Like, this is how great he was. And so they think, well, he's not that good. That's why he didn't go as far as Prince and Michael Jackson, not realizing MTV wouldn't play his video.
Exactly.
At a time when MTV started programming mainstream America.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then Prince and Michael Jackson was able to ride that wave, and Rick didn't get that. So it's hard for people to understand what DJ Quick means to music. It's hard, and I could imagine how frustrated it is for him to see it. Mm. And people don't get what he's saying. They think it's a tantrum, and they don't know. But just like me, every day I learn more and more what he really represent. And it's like, you know, it's hard. You know, it's hard to be that great. Like Rick James, it's hard to be that great and people don't get it.
What do you think it is? What do you think is that special sauce or those commonalities between all of those artists, including yourself, that allows y'all to be great?
So you have to study.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nobody talks about this when I came into hip-hop. Nobody said you have to study.
Yeah.
You have to study. You have to study records and you have to study artistry.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so everybody I'm naming has studied.
Mm.
You got to be a little batshit crazy, because people, like when I make a statement specifically explaining how Drake is in hip hop and he's mainstream rap, people gonna think of it as batshit crazy. They're like, well, he's rapping, but it's like my look is a lot deeper. My lens is much more focused onto what it is. So you got to study. You got to be batshit crazy, and you have to just be like, like, your perseverance needs to be at, like, godly levels. like you got to just go. You know what I'm saying?
I'm with you on that.
You got to go.
Yeah.
You got to just go. You got to go. And when you go, you got to go. You got to go to work. You got to go.
Exactly.
And I think those are the things that allow those men to become who they were. And my pursuit at this point to even get close to anything that they've been.
Mm-hmm. Okay, lastly, Glasses, what do you got to tell your fans out there, man? And if somebody's trying to get in contact with you, how the hell can they contact you, sir?
TheCribStore.com.
Okay,
you can send me an email, but I'm everywhere else. You can Google me, but TheCribStore.com. Come buy vinyl, buy a CD, buy a cassette USB.
Come on.
You know what I mean? Come fuck with your peoples.
What do you think about the future of just digital and hip-hop too, man? Because, I mean, where do you think this stuff is going? Because don't get it fucked up. You can single-handedly bring it back to this.
Well, my thing is just fundamentals.
Yeah.
It's entirely too much, oh, we got to do what everybody's doing today.
Yeah.
Just go to the fundamentals.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Tim Duncan, you Hall of Fame.
Off the backboard.
Use the backboard. And everything I'm doing at this point is all fundamentals.
Okay.
There are some things that I'm about to implement to change the game, but I think it's important that most artists, you know, go back to the fundamentals. Mm-hmm. T.I., go back to Toomp.
Yeah, I agree.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
I've been screaming that.
Like Juvie, go back to Manny Fresh.
Come on, man. Don't play with it. I mean, hot boys get back together. Shit.
Snoop, go back to Dre.
Go, come on,
let's keep it all. Let's go back to the fundamentals.
Exactly.
And let's execute fundamentally. And made get people back to the space where they remember why they love this. Jeezy and Shawty Red. Let's just take it back to the first day.
Come on, man.
If it's there.
Glasses.
Yeah, if it's there.
Brother, appreciate you, man.
It's an honor, bro.
Wish you nothing but the best and much success.
Thank you.
Be High Radio, Shawty, Glasses Malone. Hey.